Noting Halloween today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Since we last talked to Mark McLaughlin, he's written 3 novels. We'll talk to him about those and other scary books on Scribble. Do you write just scary things?
Oh, well, in my, I guess I call it my day career of marketing and public relations, I've written about everything from heating, ventilation, and air conditioning to women's health issues to heart disease to, oh, my goodness, you name it. I can't think of any.
Well, it's all scary stuff, though,
yeah,
Mark.
It is.
Architecture.
It's all scary. it's kind of like those masks of. For a theater, you know, the little laughing mask and the little crying mask, you know. But then it's everything in life, isn't it? Everything has its bright side. And sometimes things have their downside.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, who was it? Jane Hirschfield, I was just reading. She made a comment that I really think is interesting. No good poem is ever entirely safe.
Oh, I like that.
And I think that's true with any kind of writing, isn't it? I mean, there's always an... Unless it's a Hallmark card, right? No, I mean that.
You could get a paper cut, though.
Which is what's wrong with Hallmark cards. Well, we're here today, close to Halloween, to talk about horror fiction and what.
Yeah, well, of course.
Which is a slippery slope. I mean, define horror. What do you think of horror fiction as a genre?
Well, I think my genre, my concept of the genre. I cast a wider net. You know, a lot of people say, oh, scary vampires and werewolves and Frankenstein monsters. Well, they're not really scary because they don't exist. They're right. Just movie cliches that we like to make our little foes shiver over them. But they're really not frightening at all because they don't exist. We pretend to be scared. But I think that the best...
But if we were really scared... I mean, you don't deliberately scare yourself. When you go to a horror movie, aren't you pretending to be, or are you really scared?
I think that the best horror addresses life issues that are disturbing, but they present a distraction so that people can not think about their own issues.
You mean I'm glad it's happening to that person.
Exactly.
Not me.
Boy, that is frightening. But at least it's not happening to me.
Right. Okay.
And most importantly, I think the best horror is something where you're watching a show where people are in danger, but as you watch them and see them confront and emerge from their scenarios that are endangering them, and then they triumph. Hopefully they triumph.
Well,
but at least it makes you think, you know what? I have problems in my life, but they're not as bad as that. That's the kind of stuff I write, actually, where it's kind of like, I hope to provide some inspiration to people. You know, my life's not that bad, and that's an interesting scenario they've got there. But at least I don't have that going on in my life. I guess I'm okay.
Well,
but it's sure interesting to watch how they're handling it.
I think The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson is a perfect book for Halloween, and the movie, the first movie version of that, is perfect. You don't see anything.
Right.
You don't see anything, but you have this sense of dread and anticipation and fright all the way through. If it weren't for that one scene of the door kind of being pushed in, you don't see anything. And you anticipate it all the time, but it never happens.
Yes, it could all be in somebody's mind until you see that.
That's
evidence.
Right.
I guess it's not all in their mind, is it now?
But
I don't want to cast that wide a net. I know what Mark is saying, but for instance, you wouldn't classify Macbeth as a piece of horror, would you?
Well, witches. It does have It does have...
I know, but is it? It isn't.
Some supernatural in it. And there's also the wife's, I guess you'd call it mental illness or obsession.
Yeah.
It's a degree of, I don't know if I'd...
It has elements of horror, but it's not, you wouldn't shelve it on in a bookstore under a unit called horror fiction.
Right. I think you could put in there in classical literature and then in discussion, you might say, and there are many elements, many horrific elements in it.
While we get into general things, tell us about your last three novels.
Well, first up is Human Doll. It's about a male model who also appears on a national talent show as a host and judge for drag queens. And then suddenly they all are endangered because it's kind of like, it's not based on, but if for lack of anything to compare it to, I would say, I suppose it compares lightly to RuPaul's show, which is a talent competition for drag queens. And basically, our young gentleman, male model, who's also a host of the show, his name is December, he suddenly realizes that as different cast members and different production people die off, he realizes, oh, I might be next. And there's the thought, well, he should just leave the show. But would that remove him from being marked for death? And they all die in bizarre ways, and then we find out at the thrilling ending just what exactly is going on. In a review that was on Amazon, it was compared favorably to an Italian giallo movie. Do you know what giallo movies are?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're, for viewers at home, a giallo is an Italian movie, more so popular, I think, in the 60s and 70s, where people are dying, and there's usually a killer. And in the Italian versions, the killer usually has rubber gloves and usually kills with a knife. And we don't find out who it is until the very end.
Yeah.
And I love watching giallo movies because I like to try to figure out who the killer is.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the review came out that somebody said it was like, this is like the first giallo for drag queens. And it's kind of like, I guess it is. Because you don't find out who the killer is until the very end.
How about your other novels?
Next up is The Hell Next Door, about a young man who...
That could be anybody.
Yeah, that could be modern life. Yes, or any life, really. About a young man who is sitting on his porch one day and he sees a moving van, the vacant house just across the lane. There's a lane next to their house, and it's on the other side of the lane. A moving van that starts moving in extremely expensive and stylish furniture, and then they start moving in a huge door that has a carving of a skull on one side and the carving of a beautiful face on the other. And he's like, oh, I wonder. But they're not putting that on the front. It's way too big to put on the front of the building. And then he just finds out that just what the true nature of, quote-unquote, hell is, and that the huge house next door is going to be an outpost for what hell really is. And I think that most people will find my book very different because I don't give off hell as a place of punishment. To me, that seems like an exercise in futility. I mean, why punish somebody for eternity? I am myself an eternal optimist, so maybe that's why I don't want to think of hell as a place of eternal torment, because, well, what's the point of that? There's no productivity in that.
Well, how about the third book, then?
And the third book is, it's called Injectables. And it's about in the world, there are a lot of kind of what you'd call off-the-grid, under-the-radar clinics where people go get really cheap injectables and things to, like they make injections into their cheekbone or their cheeks, not the bones, but the cheeks, and their breasts, their behinds, other parts of their bodies to enlarge them. It's cut-rate, cheap plastic surgery. And it's about a woman who operates one of these clinics. And it's based on H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos stories that is actually... And for readers at home who aren't familiar with that, there's a writer who was working in the 30s and 40s, mostly in the 30s, named H.P. Lovecraft, who wrote a lot of monster stories based on a odd little cult of creatures. And even while he was alive, he encouraged other writers to write about his creatures and his little mythology of monstrosities. But you don't have to be familiar with his work to read my book. I mean, it's a standalone work, but it's based on his concepts. His concepts are in the public domain, so it's free range for anybody to write about it. But I feel like that I do it more justice than most who do write about it, because I've been reading about that stuff since I was 8 years old.
No wonder you turned out the way you did.
I know. Well, see, the thing was, and I'll keep this little anecdote brief, that when I was little, my mom was a real penny pincher. She'd pinch that thing till Lincoln squealed, you know. And so her idea of a babysitter was, if she needed for me to be busy for a few hours, she'd just drop me off at the library.
Yeah.
And her, what she'd say, well, I pay taxes. They should watch my kid, because I pay their salaries with my taxes, so.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad place to be.
Fortunately, but the librarians liked me, though, because I was,
you know, quiet. Lovecraft is one of those writers that most people cite when they talk about books that are about horror or suspense.
I did want to just add one quick thought, or a quick little addendum, that unfortunately, that particular library had a whole shelf of Lovecraft.
Oh, yeah, well, that'll do.
So there you go. It was in the cards. And she would happen to drop me off at the library that had, like, a very oddly extensive collection of Lovecraft work. So I only suppose that there was somebody on the staff back then who really liked Lovecraft's work. Sorry to interrupt. You were saying?
No, that's fine. No interruption. I was just thinking that I read a short story by Lovecraft years ago. 70, 80 years ago or more, and I thought not much was said, but the end of the book just sent a chill down my spine. You know, not much was going on. It was about a creature that just suddenly rose from the rotting vegetation.
Oh.
And that really got to me. But, you know, there are some books that really... I remember once reading a book called Shane Leslie's Ghost Book. It's about a priest named Shane Leslie. It's Anglican, I think. And he wrote stories about various kinds of psychic manifestations. And I thought, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. But the last one, I mentioned a friend of mine that... I was reading Shane Leslie's ghost book, and he looked at me as if I had two heads. I said, all right, you take this and read the last story. He said, I read it one evening, and it scared me to death. So, you know, do you have favorite authors' role on this Halloween
day? I like Lovecraft, and of course, Poe. I mean, I've taught a lot of Poe. I'm intrigued by the whole genre of horror because it, for one thing, it seems to me writing that there are some limitations that normally you want to make a character as alive as you possibly can. But in horror fiction, you can't really do that because then you care too much about the character. For instance, The Pit and the Cask of Amontillado by Poe. If you really cared about Fortunato, who the narrator walls up down in the catacombs and gets away with it for the last 50 years, if you cared about Fortunato's dying a slow, agonizing death behind that wall, it would destroy the story. So you've got to write about characters whom the reader doesn't care much about. But at the same time, you've got to keep the reader... You got to make the character so interesting that the reader will keep reading it.
I think Macbeth is a great example of that, in that at the end of the play, Macbeth is an insensate killer. But because you were there for him wrestling with his conscience early on, you have a great sympathy for him. And that's a trick that's very hard to pull off. To get a guy that... you know, gets your sympathy, and then he goes off the rails, but somehow you hang on to it. But that's just that rare case of Macbeth. I can't think of others.
I know what you're saying there, though, because I think, you know, obviously I've read lots of horror stories over the years, and the ones that, to me, don't work are the ones where the story is just about some guy who's just a total ass, just a total bad person who's unkind and unlikable, and then, of course, as a result of them doing bad things, something bad, and usually supernatural, happens. And to me, I don't think that those are really well-developed stories because, like you said, if you don't like them at all, or at least you don't see anything that you can sympathize with or truly realize why they are so bad, or really they don't have to be that bad at all, really. They just have to be human beings, and you just have to see something in them that you care about so that when something happens, you're like, oh, that's too bad.
One writer that of horror fiction that nobody reads anymore that I got hooked on about 20 years ago when I sort of read everything I could is August Derleth, a Wisconsin writer.
Oh, I love August Derleth.
Who, yeah. Whose ghosts are friendly and kind instead of scary.
Like in his classic story, Mr. George, where Mr. George is protecting the little girl.
Yeah.
From her wicked aunt.
I got onto him because he wrote a history of the Wisconsin River, but then I discovered that he wrote ghost stories too. Yeah. And his ghosts are completely different from any ghost you're going to find anywhere. Really interesting guy.
And he was one of Lovecraft's best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get me into that because I so reject the idea that there could be such a thing as a vampire or a zombie or any of that. It takes a really good writer and a strong story to get me to suspend my disbelief in the whole thing.
Well, you're 100% right there because, for example, like I was saying earlier, yeah, Frankenstein's not really scary, you know, just a big lumbering piecemeal casserole of
plus,
parts.
Plus, that's a much better book.
But the book is marvelous, yeah.
The movies turned it into a horror piece, but the book is a serious book.
Yeah, the movies dumbed it down.
Yeah.
And all the images.
Yeah.
The images and the...
I mean, it raises serious questions about what it means to be human and what it means to be a human in community. And all of that, you know, the movies just trashed.
Yeah, all the philosophical inquiry that goes on in Frankenstein about that very subject, about being a human. And none of that is in the movie. Nor does Dracula have a very good backstory. He's just Dracula.
but the book is much better, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Because in the book we realize that he's actually a nobleman with centuries of life and centuries of adventure. It's a story of his survival. But along the way, you kind of realize that, you know, that Count Dracula is actually just somebody who is cursed with immortality, but he's also a very rugged and a noble savage character. But you don't get that feeling from the movies.
A movie that was not a horror story, and it's the flip side of that, that I found fascinating was Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
Groundhog Day, you start with a guy who's pretty self-centered and rude and all the rest of that, but he has to live the same day over and over again. He tries killing himself. He tries lechery. He tries thievery. He tries everything. And finally, he just tries being good. And all of a sudden, he is freed. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we all had that opportunity to find out how futile it is to do the things that immediately seem appealing to you? So it's not a horror story, but it's a very moral story. And I've always been fascinated with that movie. I remember when I saw it the first time, I thought, wow, there's a lot to this movie that it bears a little thinking about.
Yeah, that he's being put into a supernatural scenario where he's actually pretty fortunate because along the way it's making him a better person.
Yeah.
By first making him realize, you know what? I'm just spinning my wheels by being a bad person. I'm spinning my wheels by being self-indulgent and just looking out for myself. If I could just find the path of becoming a better person, a more forgiving, understanding person, a person who could look at their own actions and, you know, he's the kind of person where he might be like, boy, people don't like me. I have no idea why. Why doesn't that person like me? But if he just took a moment to just think about his actions and realize, you know what, when I did that, no wonder that person doesn't like me. And when I did that, no wonder that person doesn't like me.
Roel, you're the professor here. Why do people like to be scared?
Well, I think Mark put his finger on it. First of all, you're glad it's not happening to you. In the second place, most of us live lives in which we aren't confronted, and that part of our imagination needs exercise. This is like calisthenics of the imagination, right?
Oh, that's horrible.
No. I mean, and so we enjoy. Why do we enjoy crying at a movie? Because situations in real life don't provide enough crying. And I suppose the same thing with all the other emotions. You mentioned English teacher. One of the things English teachers love to do with 50 minutes to kill, you know, three or four times a week, is make fancy distinctions. And one of the questions I'd like to ask Mark is, what's the difference between terror and horror?
Horror, I think, is more cerebral. I think terror is just like, oh, somebody's coming after me with a knife. I better get the stuff in here. You got to move along here or he's going to kill me. But horror is kind of like, I think terror is just a more visceral, spontaneous scenario, whereas horror is more the kind of thing where you might realize it can creep up on you. I mean, if, for example,
right,
if you suddenly realize that you're in a scenario where I've been in danger, this person is obviously, you might be with somebody who you suddenly realize, the more I get to know this person, they're obviously insane. There's something wrong with them.
Well, don't you think horror is more repellent?
Well,
terror is a human emotion.
Here's a fancy distinction. Terror is seeing a dog run across the street and you know it's going to be hit by the car that's coming down the street. You're terrified. Horror is seeing a dog that's squashed by a car recently lying in the street.
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
That isn't the whole thing either. But
the ultimate horror would be if you watch that dog and suddenly it gets up again and starts moving towards you.
Okay.
You got horror and terror all together.
That's right. Yeah.
If that dead dog started moving towards you, oh, no.
Don's right. You've got horror and terror together.
Yeah.
Terrified that this could, something weird is happening out of my control.
Yeah.
That's three definitions. Okay. Well, you should have been an English teacher, Don.
No, I tried that.
Is there a really good market for horror fiction?
Well, it's like, happily, there are millions of people in the world.
are there still lots of magazines that...
Magazines, not so much. Magazines have
really dropped out of existence.
Yeah, the internet has made magazines kind of... Fiction magazines.
So are
especially.
There internet magazines then that were... I mean, could you publish a horror story on the internet?
Oh, sure, there are websites.
Yeah, websites, yeah.
For myself, I rely on my story collections and my novels, which are all available through their publishers. But in all cases, always through Amazon. Like all those books I mentioned earlier, they're all on Amazon.
Right.
Because that's where, because you're right, there aren't that many places out there where you can just go sell a story. That, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, more so, but in the 2000s, not so much as we ascend into a more digital realm. That the paper, not so much.
Well, you know, with the COVID thing upon us, I don't know how you classify that. It's something that we know can kill you, but may not. And we don't know if we have it or don't. We don't know if we're spreading it or not. And science is not really sure what's going on. I mean, they don't know if you get total immunity, temporary immunity. We're finding out that people who recover have problems way past that they didn't realize.
And they can get it again.
Yeah, and so it is kind of a horror story right now.
It is, especially the way it plays on people's emotions, and also the vagaries of the whole disease itself, where it's kind of like some people get it and they only have mild symptoms and they go on to get over it and they're good to go, and other people they get it and they die.
Yeah,
and so it's kind of.
Well, the fact that it seems to be mutating, and we don't know if this case of COVID is going to be like the last one. You just don't know. And so we're living, you know, on this Halloween, we're living in a time of, I don't know if I'd call it horror or terror, but certainly
I'd call it horror because it's a kind that gnaws on your mind, you know, and it's not just because you'll think about the next day and the next. But you still have to just live a more cautious life from that point on.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody's going to be trick-or-treating tonight, but, you know, that's the time. And people get very upset that their lives are upset and that they can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and I know people who are upset because they can no longer go to bars and things like that. And it's kind of like, well, it's a... I would call that a perfectly acceptable sacrifice. Just cut it out of your life for a while. Hopefully they'll eventually have a cure, and then you can resume bars yeah. and all that stuff.
Well,
in the meantime, just buy a bottle of wine and go home and drink it.
And read books.
Read books. And
of course, the real problem is the bartender and the waiters and waitresses who are out of work. That is the really sad aspect of it all.
I do feel sorry for everybody in the hospitality industry who works so hard and suddenly, we're not needed anymore.
Yeah,
that is
or
hard.
Someone who just opened a restaurant, right? I mean,
oh, exactly. So wow. Yes, I feel so sad for the whole hospitality industry.
So we're living in Halloween-y times, I must say. But are you working on another novel right now?
Oh, I'm always working on another novel.
Do you have a list of ideas that down the road or
that you can tell us in 1 minute?
They're all about frightened people, but I will say that in the three novels that are out now and any future ones that come out, that I don't paint images of ultimate doom. You'll never have I'll never write a story where and they all died, the end. Because for one thing, I remember once watching a movie like that when I was young, where I was like, and it's such an incredible disappointment. I was like, well, that's a crappy movie. It was actually a movie called End of the World with Christopher Lee in it. And
Or On the Beach by Neville Shute.
Oh.
When he got the end of the Armageddon.
But now in the end of the... And I'm going to do a spoiler here, so anybody who doesn't want to hear the spoiler, just shut your ears for about 30 seconds, because in the end of the world blows up.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what kind of a movie is that? So don't worry, I'll never write anything. Because I like to think many of my characters are likable, and when they succeed in their... then you're happy for them.
Well, Mark, Yay. Thank you very much for joining our little Halloween fest here today.
Oh, you're welcome.
And that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back with another program next week, and we hope you'll join us for the next Scribble.